Hey, comedy fam, if you like the comedy advice on this podcast, you are going to love our newsletter. I send out weekly newsletters with comedy tips, updates on our live streams, and a lot more. So join it, linked in the show notes.
Some goals are a derivative of achieving something else. It's almost like a trophy.
Yeah.
And so, like, I tried to get rid of trophy goals a long time ago. And, like, you know, if I do all this, that works out as a benefit of it, that's great. If it doesn't work out, I accomplished the goal that I'm in control of. You know, you're in control of doing what you're doing to get noticed by the bookers, but you're not in control of booking the show.
Right.
So all my goals, I said, are something that I'm the only person that can control this.
Hot breath. Yeah, yeah. What up, Hot Breathiverse? This is your favorite host, Joel Byers. And you know what time it is. Hot breath. That's right. Episode 106, baby. We really leaned into that hot breath today. So thank you for spending your valuable time with me here on this gepisode? Hot breath-isode? It's a good one. We're following up from last week's episode with Rick Roberts. I went up to Nashville and we linked up. He has a dope podcast called School of Laughs. Last week's episode was the first half of the interview. This week, the second half. I got a lot of great feedback on the first half. If you haven't listened to it yet, he drops a lot of great info on just the business side of comedy, how you can get more organized with your writing and your overall goal setting. It's a really good, I would call it a masterclass. This guy's been doing comedy almost 30 years. You'll get into his whole backstory in a little more into this episode as well, but he actually turns the mic on me and dives into my whole career and maybe some wisdom I can share in my little comedy career I have starting out here. But it was so much fun. I hope you had as much fun as me. A lot of you reached out telling me what you liked about this past week's episode. Please, I would love for you to do the same this week. It really does mean so much, and it really does make me feel good. And it'll make you feel good, too, connecting and being like, hey, I really like this, or ooh, I'd love to hear this person on here. Really, it's the Hot Breathiverse, baby, so let's make this a community. I did also start a Patreon page. It's kind of like a tip jar for the podcast. If you go to patreon.com/hotbreathpod, over there, it's also linked in the show notes as well to make it easy for you. But it's just like a kind of a monthly subscription. You know, you could do $5, you could do 15 or 15,000, you know, whatever you want to do. But the whole goal of it is to actually build a community on there. I release a lot of, you know, original content just to the Patreon page, just for people who are kind of connected over there. But it's really it's a great way of, the whole goal of this is to really make this like a multimedia experience beyond just the audio. I want to start incorporating video into that as well. And with your help over on the Patreon page, we can make that happen and quickly. So that's all I really had to say about that. If anything, you want to support the podcast, an iTunes review is appreciated, or even just telling someone, tagging someone when I post this on Facebook or Instagram. Really, that is what this is all about, is just building it one by one. And at over 100 Hot Breath episodes, I couldn't be happier with the progress we've made. So let's take it up another level, and let's take it to the interview now. Thank you so much for your time. I will not take it for granted anymore. So, there's only one thing left to do, and that is inhale a hot breath with Rick Roberts.
Let me catch your tables on you a little
yeah,
bit.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I wasn't trying to hog this. I just
part two.
I'm gonna dive in on you, man.
No, that's great. And like, you cover a lot of stuff that's
good,
important. And if you have any other things on there, for sure, you want to jump into.
We really hit everything. I've been trying to get better about interviewing. Like when I used to interview people, like I always have show notes, but I used to just follow like a storyline of like, we're gonna go here, 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 and then here. But I found that just weaving it and just making it organic, you usually will get to everything just as it flows, you know, and instead of like trying to steer everything, just letting it flow, and then you find the talking points to insert.
Absolutely. That's something that I kind of learned as I went too, that if you've got a list of questions, that's great. It's almost like Bill Hicks would say about his act. You know, my act is what I go to when I can't think of anything else to say.
Right. Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And there are some things you kind of want to know, or you want to glean from the experience. But when you're dead set on going to the next question, you're not really listening to the answer a lot of times.
Yep.
And I was missing out on stuff, and I would get emails after a podcast. How come you didn't follow up on that?
Oh, those are the worst moments too.
I'm like, oh man, because I was an idiot. That's why. Or I didn't even hear, the question behind the question that they emailed me with. I'm like, I didn't even think that far into it. Like,
yeah.
How'd they get to that spot?
My biggest miss was when I interviewed Ari Spears, and this one still sticks with me. It's kind of like as soon as you get off stage and you remember the joke you wanted to say, you're like, oh, of course. But like as soon as the interview was over, but like I was asking him about like if he, I can't remember how we got to this moment, but I was like, do you have any regrets? And he was like, yeah. And then I missed the follow-up of like, what are they?
Oh, wow.
And then he like moved on. And I admit there was like this split second for me to jump in, and I missed it.
Yeah.
And that's like episode 40 maybe. So like you learn as you do with anything. But that's one of those moments I'm like, oh, I wish I had that back.
Yeah.
Because that would have been cool. Because he's had so many different kind of headline things happen to him. So it'd be cool to hear his like sincere perspective on him, you know.
Yeah.
But oh well, we grow.
So let me ask you, when did you start doing stand-up?
I started February 1st, 2010.
2010, so 7 years, 8 years in.
Yep, but a little over 7.5 years now, yeah.
And in Atlanta?
I started in Knoxville at Side Splitters.
Okay.
In Knoxville, did you ever do that club?
No, a couple times I thought about going over there.
Yeah.
But I heard it was just like, there was good times and bad times over there.
Yeah, this...
But I also knew the guy who, was running, not the manager, but the guy who owned the Side Splitters kind of thing.
Oh, okay.
And it could be kind of pretty hit and miss with getting paid. And so I just, at that time, I was kind of doing corporate gigs. And I didn't want to take a week as a gamble of something going down.
Yeah, it was just an open mic. They had a side room, and it was just an open mic that they did probably like once a month or whatever, mm-hmm. like on a Sunday night. So I just went, took a couple of my friends, and this was second semester senior year where... Like, your back's against the wall of, like, am I going to follow this business degree or am I going to follow my dream, which is comedy?
Uh-huh.
It, like, it's in the back of my head. And you're like, well, it's back's against the wall. Might as well just try comedy. You're about to graduate, so you have nothing to lose.
Right.
And then I did it. And like you said, you get the bug. I instantly knew. Like, I didn't kill. There were, like, seven people, and they all politely smiled.
Yeah.
And that was enough. From then on, I was just like, this is everything to me.
Do you remember any of your first jokes like from that night?
I remember because I read the book. It was the green book. I think the Greg Dean's book that has the green cover. And what I loved about that book was it was all about like one-liners and how to write one-liners and that misdirect. Because mm-hmm. that's the mechanism of a joke, is that misdirect. So... understanding how a joke works first. So I'm glad I started with one-liners and I've grown to be more conversational, but I started as a one-liner. So like I remember my first big misdirect was we had just gone to an event in Knoxville like a week ago, and I was like, college is so weird. I had this bad dream where I was in I don't remember the exact wording, but it was like I was in a disco and there were guys in underwear and flashing lights, and then I woke up and I was at WWE.
Oh, yeah.
So like the misdirect.
Yeah.
So then like that like worked kind of. So then the next month I'm like, here's my big joke.
Yeah.
And then people are like, what? It works once, so you think it's magic. But that was probably my first big misdirect.
Uh-huh.
And then like I'm tall, so like I went on some rant about like how much it sucks being tall and trying to dance with like short girls or whatever. I don't know. It's all terrible is what
I always call it. It's like your training wheels,
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Somebody, I can't remember who said it, but they always like, your first, your act is like a car.
Uh-huh.
It just needs to get you to the next place. And so when you first start off, you're driving a Mazda Datsun or something from 1980 that's missing a couple of rims, and you're just, you've got a donut on the back left tire, and you barely get
there. Yeah, yeah.
About 3 years in, you trade up a little bit and get rid of those jokes or that set or that material, and you got stuff that fits you better as you go, and hopefully at some point you're driving like a Cadillac or something smooth.
Totally, and like you're in like a Bentley now.
I'm
27 years in.
Mopeds, but yeah. I'm in something that can hold two car seats in case my little girl wants to bring somebody along. So you started in Knoxville. how long were you there before you went to Atlanta? Or were you in Atlanta, but you just started in Knoxville?
Yeah, I was going to school. I went to Merrillville College, Merrillville, a.k.a. Merrillville College. And this was second semester of senior year, so I was about to graduate. So I did all the open mics Side Splitters did. They even did like a Wednesday once a month where you would like pay maybe $5 or $10, but you got like a drink ticket or mm-hmm. whatever. But I was any stage time. I was just obsessed from the jump. So I did a couple of shows senior year, but then as soon as I went back to Atlanta, like I moved back to Atlanta, moved back home because that's what college grads do. Mm-hmm. That's the natural progression. So as soon as I got back to Atlanta, I just started looking up wherever open mics were. Like got on Facebook and was like, where can I get on stage? Where can mm-hmm. I get on stage? And then from there, you know, I worked at Enterprise Rent-A-Car for a little while. So I would work from like, you know, like 7 a.m. to 6 p.m. and then do shows that night and then get back up and do that whole grind, and then was able to save up some money living at home doing that. And then I kind of moved out on my own and then became like a dishwasher and then like waited tables and like delivered pizza and then became like a hotel mini bar attendant, just all supplemental stuff mm-hmm. to carry me along the way. Always doing comedy at night, just obsessed with it. And it's been cool to, you know, if I wasn't performing on a show, I would at least be out watching a show. Uh-huh. If I couldn't get on, like if it was a weekend, I would be at one of the clubs at least watching.
That's cool. You still enjoy watching shows?
Yeah, you know.
It changes, doesn't it?
Yeah. My favorite part about working like clubs is working with headliners is seeing what they keep and like what's part of the act, because some headliners have the same act mm-hmm. for like 10 years and they just do it word for word, and then their shows will be completely different throughout. So like are you familiar with TK Kirkland?
Mm-mm.
he's super big in the urban scene, and that's where I've kind of gotten most of my opportunity, is in the urban scene, just because that's where I got on stage. Because what I like about doing urban rooms is it's based on respect. It's not like politics of like, he's funny, but he doesn't have a flannel shirt on, so we don't like him here.
Right, right,
his
right.
beard isn't big enough or whatever. Like in an urban scene.
Can they ever be big enough?
Yeah.
Can we stop with the beards? Let's ask that. Us two clean-shaven guys talking.
Yeah.
Enough with the hipster beard, but go ahead.
But it's like, you know, I mean, that's just what I've noticed in the scenes. And, you know, now I perform anywhere, anytime in front of anyone, but like most of my opportunities came in the urban rooms. But like TK Kirkland has this catchphrase that's "Who raised ya?" And he's like, "Who raised ya?" So for like 7 shows, just "Who raised ya?" And then there's a "Who raised ya?" So that's just burned into my brain now. But he's a cool dude. We've done a lot of shows since then. But it's just I'm always trying to learn. Mm-hmm. You know, just like I'm sure, just like you. Still, I love. You've been doing comedy 27 years, and you still have a hunger for it.
Yeah, there's always something you can pick up.
So I'm always looking to learn.
That's cool. Mm-hmm. What would you just say is your like ideal audience? Like if you could say, this is the group I want to perform for 6 nights a week, who would be in the audience? Where would it be? Age group? All that stuff.
I mean, I want to say everyone, but that's so vague. You know what, though? I mean, at Uptown, a sold-out Uptown room in Atlanta. Well, Uptown is like a historic urban club. It's probably the oldest urban club in the city. And then we also have Punchline, which mm-hmm. is like one of the oldest like comedy clubs. But if you get 400 people at Uptown rocking, that's like riding a wave. And that's, you know, that's primarily black people age, I don't know, maybe like 25 to even like 55, 65. Mm-hmm. But in like a more general sense, my goal from the beginning was to be universal. Yeah. Like I want to be able to do the same jokes I do at Uptown, that I do at Punchline, that I do at a college, that I do at a church, that I do at a bar on a Tuesday. Uh-huh. You know, I've always, from the beginning, my goal was to be as universal as possible so I could just entertain everyone. So there's not really an audience where I'm like more I don't know about this compared to it's I try to approach everyone with the same enthusiasm. Uh-huh. But you know, I would be lying if I didn't say I'm almost more comfortable in front of an urban crowd now, just because they can be known for booing more or whatever. They're just more real and mm-hmm. honest. Like they don't put up with anything false, so you just got to be real. And what I've told comedians and like my students too is like, mainstream rooms are good for writing and urban rooms are good for like developing performance and persona. So like, and that can help build both sides of the comedy, kind of like your weapons.
Yeah, no, that's good. I haven't thought about it in that terms before, but yeah, you gotta be on your game.
Yeah.
And then if you're on your game, they'll listen to your jokes. Whereas the mainstream room, jokes are important. And you don't have to have the most extreme personality to pull them off.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Yeah, I haven't thought about that, but it's true. Who, fill in this blank.
Okay.
And I'll fill in mine if you feel it's an unfair question. I have the most difficulty following a comic who is, or their style is like.
A magician or a music act. A music act with a killer closer. You're not going to top that. You know, yeah. Like if they're doing bells and whistles and all this and you come up with a couple punchlines, they're going to be like, "But where's your cymbals and all that?"
Yeah.
And those are tough to follow. Magicians too are tough to follow. Those would be my two instinctual answers. What about yours?
Joe Byers. Hardest to follow Joe Byers. That's my answer. Because I just never know what I know it's going to be good no matter what venue we're in. It's going to be tough. So I can't even take him to my best audience. He's going to... I would say probably, you know, those two are always hard for most people. Isn't it weird, too, that in the Southeast, I don't know how much you travel around the country, but the Southeast is known for having comics who have musical closers.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and I think it became part of the reason, I think, is like rooms like the Stardome where it's so big.
Oh, it's a great room.
That you
room.
Need a big yeah. finale almost. You're on a theater type stage.
Yeah.
And of course, they have the abilities technology-wise to run whatever tracks you need and make it look good and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's weird. I almost work, I'd say 95% of the time just by myself. So I welcome any comic, even if they just destroyed in front of me. I'd be like, a brother. somebody to talk to after the show.
Yeah, that's always when you meet a comedian. You're like, I need to see you perform before I know if I like you or not.
Yeah, I don't know.
Not like, but it's like, I feel like you never meet a comedian until you see them perform. That's always how I approach it. It's like, we can talk in the green room, but I don't really know you till I see you on stage. Yeah. I feel like that's when you...
Yeah. I was thinking, probably with me, it would be... Regardless of what type of comedy they did or their style, if they were really heavy on misdirection, short misdirection jokes, because that's at least my first 15 minutes is a lot of that.
Uh-huh.
And the only times I've had tricky troubles with following somebody is when they kind of had that style throughout, and then I step right in with that kind of style. They're like, we just saw 30 minutes of this or whatever.
Right, you know? Because that's asking a lot of them to just keep popping them all those laughs per minute, you know?
Yeah, and plus they know that they're going to be, you know, you should have some stories, you should have some short ones, you should have some in-between jokes, should whatever you can to kind of keep them off balance. But when they see that 30 minutes in a row, it's just like, it's going to be harder to surprise them because they're going, okay, here comes the punchline.
Right.
Whereas you see a lot of guys now, or more people now, where it's so conversational, it's almost like I almost wish I would have started this way, because when it's really conversational, there is no pause where the punchline is. So if the audience doesn't get the punchline, you're just saying the next sentence.
Yep.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, they don't know you missed.
They don't know. So you just slow down when they do laugh and then you pick it up. I know a couple comics that are extremely successful and that's their style. And I do pretty well after that because it's a different thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but they're bigger names and funnier people because they've got that thing. So it's a weird, you know... Weird thing.
It's tough to overcome that silence, though. You know, like that's, and I'm only 7.5 years in. So that's, I mean, that is some time, but in the scheme of I'm doing this the rest of my life, it's still like training wheels, you know. So I'm just now in moments of where like you're in silence and you're like, oh, this is different.
Yeah.
Where you force yourself to sit in it and then you get it. Like, I'll still rush. Like, I'll still be like, but I want to get to the next joke instead of just, like, letting stuff breathe and it come in like a tide, you know? But I'm trying to focus more on just the power of silence and how you can use it. But it is scary when you lean into that void, you know?
But luckily, there's a lot of it.
Yeah. Luckily, that just made it sound like I'm never funny. I'm really good at silence right now, guys. Yeah.
I've trained my audience not to laugh. It's a whole other level of comedy. A lot of people don't get it. It's kind of Annie Kaufman-ish. Anyway.
Yeah.
That's funny, man. What's been like a moment on stage where you surprised yourself in some way, like that you either... was able to bail yourself out of a situation, or you went on a tangent just trusting that it could lead somewhere and it did, or maybe you walked in a situation that you thought this is going to be tougher than I've ever had and you were able to handle it. Has there been some cool moments like that, I'm sure?
Oh, man. I had one of my favorite moments on stage recently, very recently. I was featuring at Uptown for a Toure, comedian Toure, who's based out of Philadelphia, but he brought up like Kevin Hart and like he saw all these dudes come up. But it was Sunday show. What I love, you know what's so funny is you can have a killer weekend, but that Sunday show will creep on you. That Sunday show may be the killer one where the crowd comes back on you. You're like, oh, I'm just going to coast on this final show. I've been having good all weekend, and that's the one you bomb at. So like I started out really hot on the set, and I was feeling good from like the weekend, and like I was doing like a lot of this topical racial stuff and just trying to experiment with like walking the line really, and like how to go too far and when not, and kind of do that balancing act. So I was feeling good in the set, and I said something about like there's definitely, you know, a balance in comedy, and I said something where I completely lost the audience, like they just completely shut down. And it was one of those moments though where you're doing well and then you start to feel it, you're losing your grip.
Yeah,
and it starts to fade, and then it's okay, it's silent, and now I'm talking and it's silent. And I was only about halfway through my feature set, so I stopped and I leaned like onto the front table, and I was like, okay guys, where did I lose you? Cause we got about 15 minutes left. And this could go either way right now. And I was just real in that moment, and they appreciated that.
Uh-huh.
And then from then on, I said something like, okay, so what we're going to do is try this again, and let's have a good second half, okay, team? And I was like, ready, break. And then I stood back up and went back into my set, and I got them back.
Oh, that's cool.
That was the first moment on stage I was fully immersed in the moment, since there was a disconnect, and then addressed it. And like, okay, where did I lose you? Okay, I understand that. I went too far here. Let's regroup, come back together, and finish strong. And then I got back up, and they were just with me from that jump. And that was the first moment where I like was able to just kind of rope-a-dope them, you know?
That's cool, so
that,
man.
Felt good.
No, that's good. That is kind of the thing that happens when you're about 6, 7, 8 years in, is you've got, you know, you can go back to your jokes, but you also, as you're telling your jokes, your brain can do other things.
Yeah.
You know, like the first 5 or 6 years, you're just like, I got it. What's the next thing I'm going to say? But once you know the next thing you're going to say or shouldn't say,
whatever, yeah,
you can think in other terms. And it's like, it's almost like, I think in my first 3 years of comedy, I never took the microphone out of the stand. I just stood right in front of it. 3 years in, I'm like, I've got arms.
Yeah.
I can use my arms, you know?
Yeah.
So it's like, that's cool, man. So you're moving right on pace, finding the moments and having fun in there.
Oh, that's great, man. I appreciate that.
Yeah. And really, from here on out, it's all easy. So you'll
sure, yeah.
The next 20 years, at least.
The challenge is what drives me, though. I love. It's just so hard, and it's so inspiring, though. Just to, you have those moments, and like, I'm glad you asked about like a moment, because that's what really drives us. Is you'll have that one set where every breath works, and you're like, oh, I can do this, and then you have 6 months of nothing, and then you look for that one moment again. And the closer those get, I feel like that's when you see your progress. I did that again. Instead of 6 months, it was 4 months.
Right.
You know, so I just always try to be aware of those moments, chasing waterfalls, if you will.
Yeah.
DLC. Yeah. I didn't know if you knew that.
No, I'm still thinking I should have thrown in a 1-ray or a 3-ray joke when you're talking about 2-ray. I know it's Brother Blu-ray and Hooray. It's just like,
Blu-ray.
I'm like, I'm not going to say it. Well, I'm going to say it. I went ahead and did it. I should ask this every episode. I don't think I always do, but what is like a struggle that is right now, and you're like, man, if I could just figure out this piece of the puzzle, I can get to the next part, and things would be a little bit easier. But it's like a hurdle or a bump. It just seems like you would have gotten past it by now or something, or it just keeps popping up. You got one of those?
Dude, organization is killing me right now. Like, I can't, I don't keep track of everything. I'll do an awesome writing session or whatever on like a piece of printer paper, or like I'll be writing and like I'll be driving and keep notes, or like I'll have a great idea that I put in my phone and never look at, or I've tried where I'll have like 3 notebooks. I was like, okay, I'm gonna do all my broad writing in this notebook, boil it down to the best ideas in this notebook, and then take it to the stage and edit it in this notebook. And like, I've tried all these different systems, and I just That is a big barrier right now as I'm trying to up my productivity and efficiency is just organization. Mm-hmm. So,
well, maybe, you know, you just have one day of the week where you go back and you pull stuff from your phone, from your, you know, and you just, you archive it, you get it in Evernote or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and you're revisiting ideas you had and getting them into one spot. You know, Evernote's great because it syncs to all your devices and all that stuff.
Okay, yeah, I've heard of Evernote. I don't have it though.
It's really cool, and you can, I think you can get on two devices for free, and then the third one, it's like $9 a month. I'm not sure, but
mm-hmm.
but it, as soon as you write it in your computer, it shows up on your phone. It's kind of cloud based or whatever they say.
Okay,
but you can tag each joke. So you've got 20 different jokes about dating or being married now or what have you. You just put that as one of the tags, just like you do in a document, you know, and so you. Say we're going to do a set where you wanted to only work on that particular topic, you can just search by tag and all those jokes come out of all your different folders into one little place.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So you would benefit from that.
That's interesting. Totally. Yeah.
And just setting aside, maybe it's once a month, I don't know, but you just go say, this whole day or this 4 hours, I'm going to go in and make sure I get everything off my phone. I'm a little voice memos.
Mm-hmm.
Get them in print and then upload them to Evernote so that they're not lost.
Yeah.
And then once they're in Evernote, you can categorize and start to see maybe some connections between material that never you would have never put together before.
Mm-hmm.
And then I would suggest this too, just while I'm thinking about it, because as you're plugging stuff into Evernote, if you choose this path, maybe you just choose to put them all in one notebook, but whatever it is, look at each joke and ask yourself, what is this joke really about? So it might be a joke about being married or whatever, but in the joke is failure to communicate. There's a communication problem. You might have a joke about a previous boss where that joke is really about not communicating correctly. And you can put those two jokes back to back. You would never think about your wife and your boss. Well, maybe you do. I don't know how your wife runs your life, but your wife and your boss in the same sentence. But there might the emotion or the state of mind that puts you in both of those places to make those stories relevant to you for your stand-up can connect. And you could build a bit out of three things that you normally wouldn't think about.
Hmm.
Do you know what I mean?
Same
thing. I always tell my students, every joke you write, in the margin, put what emotion you should deliver that joke with. Because we only write stuff about stuff that drives us crazy, that makes us mad, makes us sad, makes us nostalgic, whatever it might be.
Mm-hmm.
But if you know that, A, you should deliver the joke with some kind of style and some mm-hmm. kind of emotion behind it. So that will up your performance part. But you could tag around three or four jokes together that are all anger-based and put them in the same bit so you're not angry in minute 1, minute 27, and minute 56. You look bipolar when you're, you know. But if
right.
you can stay in the anger for a while, and another thing that makes me mad, boom, boom, boom. You know, you can hit three or four different topics, but the through line is anger. Or
Whoa.
The through line is lack of communication or whatever it might be. A lack of trust, whatever it could be, that drives the joke. Or where it came from.
Like a painting. Like each emotion is a color.
Sure, you can think of it that way.
Interesting.
You could even, if you wanted to go crazy and get 9 highlighters of different colors, just like, you know, then you could visually look at it like a, I always, this is what I want to do with my organization that we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
I watch Monday Night Football or Sunday Night Football or whatever, and the coaches have all their plays on their laminated sheet, and you can see they've got like yellow plays or when it's third and short. Like I want to put all my jokes into one big laminated sheet and put them up. And when I do my 1 hour special, I'm like, that didn't work. Okay, I've got 30 seconds here to get you. It's a 30 second joke.
You have like the wristband, yeah, like the quarterbacks will wear.
I'm calling an audible right here. All right. We need 3 guys deep on this one. But just, as you organize your material, finding connections besides just the topic, but the emotion or the state of mind or what puts you in that place to write about.
Whoa. Yeah, I love that because I've found that those are my best jokes or where there's. I'm making connections that aren't on the surface there.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a great way to find that. Oh, dude, that's awesome. I'm definitely going to do that.
And you can choose whether to even let the audience in on that or not. I mean, you could audibly say, you know, man, this makes me mad, this makes me mad. Or you could just do it.
Mm-hmm.
Just so that you mentally know what 3 jokes go together and they'll figure it out.
Yeah.
You know, but that would be one thing as far as getting organized. And as great as Evernote is and digital stuff is, it's probably good to write them all down on an index card too.
Okay.
Because if you can't get to the punchline on the front of an index card, it's too long anyway.
Yeah.
You know, but I've got, I don't know if I have them around here. I've got these little index card things and they've got like a little binder, like your key binder.
Yeah.
And you can just flip through it. And so as I'm working on this new CD, I have an orange version of that. Everything orange is my like productivity color, right? So if it works, if it's producing for me, it goes in the orange index file.
Whoa.
If it's green, it's new, it's green. So I take that one to open mics and try to get those jokes into the orange.
Whoa.
You know what I mean? So it's but those things fit in your back pocket, fit on your keychain. They're always with you. So if you got an idea for a joke, you can write down a little bit and then follow it up later.
Yeah, I saw Jeff Foxworthy, because he lives pretty much by Atlanta, and he would come to the Punchline sometimes on a Sunday and sell it out, just working on new material. Yeah. But he had three bins on stage. Have you seen him do this?
Yeah.
He had three bins on stage and like a pile of note cards, and he would pull note cards and he would do the joke, and if it kills, he'd put it in A. If it was okay, he'd put it in B, and if it died, he'd put it in C. He would just go for an hour, hour and a half, just doing these jokes and then just putting them in the proper bin. And that's how he would just pretty much write on stage. And most killed, but I guess he's listening for certain reactions.
Right.
So it may be mediocre, or like one may die that didn't really die or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, he rarely had one that was a C, probably like one or two out of his entire set.
Wow.
But it was interesting to watch.
Yeah, I always like watching headliners. Back when I was coming up, they would do this thing where a lot of them during the check drop would just tell the audience, all right, you're not going to be paying attention for 5 minutes, so I'm going to try out 5 minutes of new jokes.
Hmm.
And they'd literally get an index card, and if it worked, they would, hey, I'm keeping that one, put it in their back pocket. If it didn't, they would crumble it up and throw it on stage.
Right.
But it took me years to realize it was the same 5 minutes of jokes for the past 5 years. It was just something they did as a game. Because I'd see them like 5 years later, and right. Like, oh, this is a new thing. Let's try this out.
Yeah.
But they always had a couple that didn't work on purpose, so they could like get the laugh of it, throwing it away.
Mm-hmm.
Just gamified it, you know?
Yeah.
And it's pretty funny, man. How much do you travel? Where are your gigs at? How often are you doing stuff? Like 7 years in, and you know, just trying to get a gauge of where you're at comedy wise.
Yeah, all my opportunities, especially out of town, have come from connections. Like I don't have a manager, an agent. Like all the colleges I do are from one of my friends who's in the college circuit, who was like, hey, you want to come open for me here? Mm-hmm. Make a couple $100. You know, I mean, that's a great gig, you know? So, all the work I've done has been just from friends pretty much. And, my travel, it's weird. And that's what I'm finding. It almost comes in waves. 1 month I may be booked every week. And then another month I may be booked like a Thursday or whatever, you know? A lot of the stuff, like you said, with your students, I'll have students who are like, my friend's in a biker gang and they are having this reunion and they need a comedian. Do you want to do it? You're like, is it safe? Okay.
Right.
You know, yeah. And I'm performing at an apartment complex next week for one of my students. All local stuff. I mean, I have traveled. The farthest I've traveled was Japan. I did Japan, I think it was earlier this year, with a couple friends. They had like a military show, and they're like, hey, you want to go to Japan and get paid for doing it?
That's awesome.
Like, yeah, it was awesome.
You were the tallest guy in the country for a week.
Yeah, it was. We literally like flew in, did the show like 2 hours later, and then left the next morning. It was really just a turnaround.
Yeah.
We didn't even get to see the Tokyo or anything besides the drive to the base, but it was still cool, and you feel like a comedian. And you're like, I'm traveling around the world doing comedy. But it's inconsistent right now. I don't have like guaranteed dates. I have sporadic dates throughout this for like the rest of the year, you know, but it's nothing's like blocked off. We're like, yeah, I've got all of November locked in.
Right.
I would love that, but it hasn't come in organized yet. Yeah.
Do you put on any of your own shows or have you?
Yeah, I do host a weekly show every Wednesday. I host a show at Java Monkey in Decatur, Georgia. I've been doing that a little over 6 years now. So I've been hosting that one consistently.
That's great.
So that's great stage time. You know, it started out as every other week, and now it's become every week. So that's always good. And I'm doing open mics. You know, I still hit that. I found since I've gotten married, you look for the balance more of like, okay, if I'm booked this weekend, I'll lay off of the open mics as much, because I'll still do my Wednesday, but I'll maybe skip a Tuesday where you can do 4 or 5 shows.
Right.
If I'm booked on the weekend, but if my weekend's open, I'll hit the week card and then balance it out on the weekend with my wife. So you look for those moments as far as time management, but I'm still as thirsty for the stage as like day one.
Right.
Yeah.
That's cool, man. What I'm curious what led you to start the podcast. I mean, we talked about it a little bit a while back as far as like just meeting other comics and things. And Atlanta had the hot scene, but the just to get in there and start banging it out every single week. Let me ask you this, but I'm trying to say, did you know how much work it was going to be?
No, and nobody does. And I just did a podcast panel with two other podcasters, and we calculated it's like 15 hours, like an episode, like from like the idea to researching to even it just take accumulate, like, you know, taking up brain bandwidth, even just thinking about it, all the way to the editing and all that. It's like 15 hours an episode. But I had no idea how much work it was going to be. I was just inspired because the goal was we had 10 comics on Last Comic Standing. And then the previous year, the comic that won was from Last Comic Standing.
That's right.
Rodman. Mm-hmm. And then that year, Clayton English from Atlanta won. But I was like, my goal is to interview these 11 people. That was like my goal. I was like, and if I can do that, we'll just see what happens after that. And I achieved that goal. I mean, it was not easy. Some had to go through management. Mm-hmm. Some were like phone interviews, and then like the recorder dies, and then
The worst.
Oh my gosh!
My three best interviews nobody will ever hear. The three best. Oh, I mean, I'll tell you later, but it's like, oh,
it happens though.
Yeah,
it happens. But as soon as I achieved that 11, I was like, interesting. I may be onto something here if I could climb that mountain. So I pretty much did those 11 and then took a couple month break of like, I'll do a season two soon or whatever. But since I hit season two or whatever, I've just been doing it weekly ever since. But it's now at this point, I'm using it as much as my listeners like to learn, I like to learn. Mm-hmm. How often are you going to be working with a headliner and then you're like, hey, do you want to sit down for an hour and me just ask you how you're on Letterman 12 times? Oh, you got on Conan? That's one of my goals. Sit down and just tell me every step of the way. And do you know the booker for Conan? And will you show them my tape?
Right,
like you never, without a microphone, you're like, this guy's kind of pushy. But with a microphone, they're like, oh, this guy cares.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. It's interesting. The microphone kind of makes it more like official. And you're like,
yeah.
You know, without the microphone, it's like, okay, we've been at Starbucks for an hour, 25 minutes now.
This exactly. is crazy. Yeah. I just use it to learn. I love it.
That's cool.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any things you wish you would have put into the podcast as far as like a segment or something that you didn't do that you wish you would have? Because I definitely have some thoughts on that.
Like specific segments?
Uh-huh.
No, nothing as of right now. You know, sponsors would be cool. Or like money.
Mm-hmm.
No, getting paid. I have used the podcast to leverage certain services or certain events or things like that, but I haven't. There's been like a festival that'll come through Atlanta, and they'll pay me for like whatever weeks leading up to it. But I haven't been able to like reach out with a press kit and be like, hey, if you're interested, you know, I haven't made that connection yet. So that's something. Just when you just break down the time you're putting into it, some sort of return. Like you have a Patreon, and I just started a Patreon. Just for the sake of, I like how you're like, it's kind of like a tip jar, you know, if you get extra original content you can't get anywhere else and all that. So I just started that, is trying to create more of a community around Hot Breath, the Hot Breathiverse,
yes.
as I call it, you know.
Which was on my list of questions.
Oh.
Was it Hot Breath because Hotlanta and you pulled that together, or what made you think of Hot Breath?
Oh, man, I was a fan of Fresh Air. And I was just like, what's a quick one hitter? So it became Hot Breath. And then, you know, it all just naturally evolved.
That's
yeah.
pretty funny. I thought it was always Hotlanta, Hot Breath, because you're talking about Atlanta comics. But it was Fresh Air the whole time.
Oh, it was just Fresh Air the whole time.
I'm Terry Gross.
Ripped it. Yeah.
I'm going to make you cry about something you didn't expect.
And my early interviews were like, so tell me about that open mic.
Yeah, yeah.
What was that boo story you heard about? You know, and the boo story has become a benchmark of the episodes of, even if it's not a comedian anymore, just an epic failure. Mm-hmm. Because I like highlighting the success, but you're nowhere without your failure.
Yeah.
So failure is the best teacher. So I like to always highlight those in the interviews as well.
Yeah, I think I would, now that I'm like 154, something like that into it. Like,
yeah.
I think, man, I had 154 chances to ask at least 120 comics throughout, you know, with the other people mixed in, a certain question and maybe get, you know, just I could have written a book probably based on one answer.
Mm.
And so anybody that's looking for that one answer in comedy, like, you know, what's the best way to network? Well, here's 150 people with their best. You know, I feel like I've shortchanged my listeners away by not being able to compartmentalize specifics.
Mm-hmm.
Not to say I won't do that going forward, but I'm like, oh, man, I had some really some opportunities there that I didn't take advantage of because I was just thinking of, I need to get one done this week.
Right, yeah. And you're like, okay, I got to release it in 2 hours.
Yeah, yeah. There was definitely some times. I remember I was trying to upload it as I'm driving in my car using my Bluetooth Wi-Fi into my laptop because I'm like, it comes out every Friday at, you know.
Exactly.
My goal, reason was when comics leave for the weekend to do a gig, there's an episode to listen to.
Oh, cool.
So I wanted to have it by Friday morning. So Thursday night, I would try to get it up after midnight, but I was doing this long run of gigs and I just couldn't get it together. And I'm like, I was literally driving really slow because I had good Verizon reception in one area and I was, hot, you know. Whatever, man. But it was like, they can stress you out.
Oh, yeah, because mine's every Monday at 8 a.m. And it's like, well, it's TikTok, you know. It's 1 a.m. on Monday.
I know. It's like, even that when that was happening, I was getting phone calls coming in. Man, are you okay? I'm like, hang up. I'm using this signal. I'm trying to get it going.
I'm sure you've hit themes along the way, though. You could go back and create, kind of like people do their tweets. You know, they'll write books about their tweets.
Well,
I'm sure
one thing
you
I definitely
stuff.
Want to do, and I may do it over the holidays, is, you know, I've had several people that have been on Letterman.
Yeah.
I just want to have one episode where the 5 or 6 guys I've had on Letterman all talk about that specific experience.
Mm.
And then I got some people have been on Conan, and some people have done USO tours, different things like that, where I could say, here's a theme. It's kind of a, you know, it's not a new episode, but it's, instead of, some people may be just finding it now, there's no, I can't expect them to go back and listen to all 154.
Yeah.
But if there's one topic they like, I can find it for them and maybe make a few of those. So there's things like that I want to do for sure.
It's just time.
Yeah, I mean, I wish I had a staff here that I could assign it to.
Yeah, it's very time consuming.
Yeah, which is something, you can't make more of that unless you get organized. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and that's why I said organization was my big thing, because like I'll have bursts of like a week where I, like, because my wife is in project management, so there was one Sunday where we sat down and organized the week in an Excel sheet, and that week was super efficient. I was like all cylinders. I was like, this is awesome. And then I didn't organize the next week, and then the wheels just fell off.
Yeah.
You know, but for that 1 week, you're like, yeah. And then I've been able to see the benefits of being organized, but it's, you got to be organized. You got to organize to organize.
You do, you know? You know. And you also have to have days off. Like, that's the one thing I've learned over the years. Like, like today was pretty much a day off with my kids home from school and that kind of stuff. And I was on the road the last 4 or 5. I really hadn't had a night off until yesterday, since the month started.
Jeez.
So I was like, you know, there's stuff I need to do, but it's not crucial.
Mm-hmm.
It's more important for me to kind of recharge and just be Papa and hang out and be a goof. And, you know, we went for ice cream and stuff like that. And that got me recharged for today, which I picked up a few more things this morning, knocked them out. But sometimes, you know, if you're gigging hard, you don't need to be stressing out every single minute at home. I guess the one thing I'll tell you that I've learned is when I'm on the road, that's when I really crack the whip on myself to get work done.
Mm.
Lucky enough, I can fly to most of my shows now, so I've got 2 or 3 hours on a flight where I can, you know what I'm saying?
Very nice, yeah. Mr. Roberts.
Yeah, it's a, you know, it's a hang glider and it's going down fast off of Ruby Falls, but it's for that 30 seconds before I hit the ground, I'm getting something done.
You should teach a comedy class. That was funny.
Well, you know what I'm saying? but yeah, on the road, in a hotel, it can be easy just to flip on the TV and zone out. And sometimes you are tired and you got to get ready for the show, but there's times where you can be productive on the road.
Totally.
And if you can do that when you get home, you don't have to stress out about catching up.
Yeah.
Whereas in the old days, I would just be on the road and let the road be itself, and I get home and try to do all the busy work. And it was just like, you're never really relaxed ever because you're doing one or the other.
Mm-hmm.
But just taking days off, going, turn the phone off, shut down the email for a day. If anybody really needs to get a hold of you, they'll get a hold of you. You know.
Do you find the goals will help kind of determine your decision making process as well? Like knowing what you want to achieve.
Yeah, absolutely. Like I was noticing earlier today, I've met my monetary goal for the year.
Oh, nice.
For the bookings and for everything.
Yeah, and it's October.
Yeah.
Great.
So like, if I don't book anything else, I hit my target goals. Best year ever. Everything else is gravy. But also, you know, I can like focus on my kids a little bit more. I've said that a lot in this interview, but it's like just now I know I can work more on 2018.
Mm-hmm.
We're fine for the rest of the year, but if something comes up, I'm going to run it by the committee. Like, all mm-hmm. right, on November, like the thing came in today, November 4th. I know it's my daughter's fall festival at school. She probably won't even notice I'm there if I'm there. So do I take the gig or not? You know, I'll run it by them and see what they say. But if they say, nah, don't take it, stay home, I'm totally cool with that.
Mm-hmm.
But if I hadn't had goals and I wasn't tracking it, mentally I would have thought, I should be gone. That's a weekend. It's a Saturday. I should be out of town. But it's not necessarily that way. When you got your goals, you know what you've hit. And, you know, next year I'll try to do 10 or 15% better than this year. So it'll be maybe next year I will take that goal, that gig or whatever.
What if you don't hit your goals? Like for instance, you know, I'm my goal is to do everything out of Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
But like last year, my goal was to perform on Conan. That didn't happen. This year, my goal was to perform on Colbert. It's October. Hey, Joel. You know, and not for lack of effort. Like last year, I made steps as far as like I interviewed Paul Provenza, who was in Friends with the Booker, who then sent my tape to the Booker. So like I made a connection to Conan, mm-hmm. but not quite. And then this year, I've interviewed people who are on Colbert that then connect me with the Booker, who I've then sent my footage to. So like I made steps in the directions of the goal, but like, especially you've been doing comedy almost 3 decades, like how, like, okay, that goal didn't happen this year. Do I just push it back a year and be like, well, this year? Or like, how do you rationalize like a goal that you don't hit?
It can be tricky. Like some goals are a derivative of achieving something else. It's almost like a trophy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so like I tried to get rid of trophy goals a long time ago. And like, you know, if I do all this and that works out as a benefit of it, that's great. If it doesn't work out, I accomplished the goal that I'm in control of. You know, you're in control of doing what you're doing to get noticed by the bookers, but you're not in control of booking the show.
Right.
So all my goals I set are something that I'm the only person that can control this. If by doing that, it gets me to the next spot, that's great. But I'm like, you know how it is, even just trying to get a booking at a club or something like that.
Totally.
If you've never met the guy, he's never seen you, there's no reason he should return your call. But that could be a goal every week. Like there was for years I was trying to get in the punchline.
Yeah.
For years. I just never could. And then one day I get a call, hey, you want to come down for New Year's Eve and work the New Year's Eve gig? I'm like, well, yeah, that'd be great.
Right.
I would have done your worst week of the year, but yeah, I'll take the, you know, it's like, it just didn't fit for whatever reason.
Uh-huh.
So that's, but my goal could be to hit X amount of dollars, work X amount of cities and X amount of new clubs. Like those were goals like at my 7-year mark. This would make sense for you since you're at your 7-year mark.
Yeah.
I'd done it long enough to where I'd been in most of the Funny Bones and stuff in the Midwest and some Zanies and some other clubs. And so my goal at the 7-year mark was, take the bottom 20% and don't book it again. So if I went, say, the whatever clubs paid the bottom 20% for MCs or features or whatever I was doing, don't take those again. Try to find better clubs. So even if those, say that was 6 weeks of work in that bottom 20%, even if I don't work those 6 weeks, I'm happier those 6 weeks. And I can be at home and I can be doing my local open mics and developing material instead of beating my head against the wall in a club that doesn't treat the comics well, the accommodations suck, and it's a 17-hour drive. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So that was something I started right around the 7 or 8 year mark where I was like, let's weed out the stuff that's dragging me down. And that'll free up time to be creative or for more gigs to come in, different kinds of gigs. But just to fill up my calendar, I shouldn't be worried about that. It should be the quality of the work.
So you track every cent, pretty much.
I've always been like this, because if you don't, then you don't know. You can mentally and emotionally think that was a killer week, and you look at the numbers and it wasn't a productive week for your career at all. You had fun because of two comics you worked with and you got two beers for free every show or whatever. Whatever you in your mind at that time think is a killer week.
Right.
But is that leading to something bigger? You know, and I would look, I think at one point I even had like a 10-point checklist. Like, here's how I judge a gig. A, do they give you free food? Because when you're first starting out, that's pretty important.
Right.
B, is this club connected to any other clubs? Like, could this week lead to other weeks? 3, is this club in a big city where I can make connections? Like when I started doing corporate work, I would invite people out from different companies to see my show. I'd pay for their ticket to the comedy club, and their two drinks and their meal or whatever. But if they had a Coca-Cola in Atlanta, can come see you, or somebody in Coca-Cola, probably can get the main, not the guy that knows one of the ingredients, but you know, but you're in a good club where in a city where there's opportunities like that, that was worth more than going to, you know, Davenport for the 17th time or whatever, even though that was one of my favorite places. In the summer, does the club have a pool? Because I write at the pool a lot. I'll sit there and I'll read the paper. I'll write jokes topical. If there's no pool, I'm not as likely to write. You know what I'm saying? Then there was just a whole list of things like that. And then the money was part of it. And, you know, T-shirt sales and CD sales, which I got a little too focused on that for a while. Because I was really moving some shirts and CDs back in the day.
Nice.
So
all based on a joke?
Yeah.
Yeah, like you have a T-shirt based on a joke. Yeah. Yeah.
So, but that was in the equation. And so I would get each of those 10 points, they're worth 10% of 100. So if there was no food, they didn't give you free food, it's down to 90 already. Mm-hmm. If it wasn't in a bigger city, it's down to 80. So it really had, everything else really had to come up for it to stay on the calendar.
Is this in a notebook and like each page is dedicated to a gig? How are you organizing?
Yeah, I think I just had it wasn't in a spreadsheet, but it was on like a little graph paper or something.
Okay,
it was
cool.
I was pretty nerdy with that stuff.
That's no, I need that, like I need that, like those detail oriented specifics, like you said, so you can then quantify your decisions.
Right. Which it's hard when you're a creative person to know if you're doing well or not.
Right.
Because it's all based on emotion. And for comics, you know, it can be based on just survival, like, you know, I got to do this gig because this week is empty, and if I don't do this, then... So I think, in a roundabout way, as a spinoff of that thought, is if you're trying to go full-time just to say I'm full-time, but you find that you're starving because, you know, not every month is got enough paid gigs, then there's no shame in having a regular job as long as it's giving you the opportunity to perform until you can make that leap.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you make that leap, you start taking gigs you shouldn't take to fill in weeks you don't need to fill in, to work for people you don't need to tell jokes to, just to stay I'm a full-time comedian.
Oh, yeah.
So I've known lots of comics who waited later, you know, probably later than they should have to go full-time just because they want to make sure they had their debts paid off, their car was paid off, and they weren't taking everything just to take it. You know, Greg Warren, I interviewed him a while back, and he's a good example of a guy. He had a killer job at Procter & Gamble. And he didn't have to leave. So he just worked the clubs around Cincinnati, Dayton, Columbus, Ohio, Cleveland, wherever was a driving distance kind of club. And he'd work his day job until he was a killer feature ready to headline. And then he went full-time.
Smart.
You know, so, yeah, just kind of just really looking at what the gigs are. And you know, for me now, 20-whatever years in, 7 or 8, is like, did that show benefit anybody? If it just benefited me, then that's okay. But, you know, did it benefit my family, my kids' college fund? That's good, you know. That's mm-hmm. that's worth doing, even though it might not be the best gig sometimes. But I definitely turn down stuff now. It's not a good fit for them. College gigs, for one. Like, there's a couple colleges that keep coming up every 6 months. Hey, we want you. I'm like, you want me because you're my age and you're booking this, but the kids don't want me. And I appreciate it, you know. And they're like, you're probably right. They just want to come hang out with me because I used to work with them back in the day.
Right, right, right.
But I have to keep saying no to it. And it's decent money. It's not, you know, like life-changing, but it's a gig that is not far away and I could do it.
Yeah.
But it's not to the benefit of the kids that are going to come to see the show.
Mm.
So
that takes discipline and great awareness to turn those down.
But, you know, it's just one of those things. Early on, I think you should take just about everything.
Yeah.
But don't go full-time so you have to take everything. You know, just keep looking for your ultimate group, you know, that you want to perform for and do it.
Yeah, I mean, I've driven 10 hours to Kokomo, Indiana for $100, you know, up and back. That's when I felt like a comic, when I went up and back 10 hours each way with another comic. But that is something me going full-time was like a weaning process. Like, I worked at Enterprise, was able to create a bit of a nest egg there, and then, you know, moved out of home, became a dishwasher and, like, waited tables and, like, the savings was dwindling, but it was getting me one step closer to like the ultimate goal of being full time in it. So I would, like, you know, chip away at those savings while also being motivated to bring in more through comedy and all that, till eventually I was like, oh, I can sustain, you know, a minimal lifestyle doing comedy, which was the goal at that time.
Yeah.
So now it's like to have a lifestyle.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, you can change it, but at least you got one.
Exactly. Yeah,
yeah, totally. That's cool, man. Well, let me ask you this as we wrap up. Your podcast, Hot Breath, you're over 100 episodes, aren't you?
Yeah, we just passed 100. I'm on like 104 now.
All right, so I want my listeners to go listen to it, but if there was maybe, let's say, two or three that you'd want them to start off with, like, oh, man, this is really worth your time. There's some good info in this. The comic or whoever was really bringing it. Maybe, or just one or two episodes that they should start with, and then they can kind of get into it.
Yeah, the first one that comes to mind is it's an episode in the 90s. Her name is Manu, and her company is called At Your Social Team. She's a social media guru. Like, she straight up, like, I'm very aware of people's time on my interviews, so I'm like, so I'll be like, all right, as we're wrapping it up. But she kept saying, well, let me tell this one more tip. We ended up going like an hour and a half because she just kept saying more tips. But this lady built up King of Pops. Do you guys have King of Pops here?
I don't know.
It's like a handmade popsicle company that started in Atlanta that's now all over the country. But she built their social media, and she used what she learned there to now do it with small businesses. And she just pretty much gave me like a workshop on like social media and these different tips and different hacks you can use for like Instagram and Facebook and all that. Like, broke it down in a very like digestible way.
Okay.
Of like, oh, I can apply this and I can plug this in. You know, it was that has completely changed my social media approach. My whole online identity, it like changed just instantly.
Awesome.
So I would definitely say that one. Which I think I think it's in the 90s. Let me think. I mean, Aries Spears was a good one because he's one of the best impressionists on the planet, and I got him to break down like how, like the music of his impressions. Cool. And cool. How he does impressions. And I'm just sitting here in his hotel lobby, like across from Aries Spears, as he's like going through his like Shaq impression and telling me how he does it. Like, that was a cool moment to be involved with. And that was because like I'll be like, okay, he's good at act outs. Let me really dive into how he's good at act outs. Uh-huh. Okay, they're really good at writing. Like Tom Simmons, are you familiar with Tom Simmons?
Yeah, yeah.
He's one of my favorite comics. Like, he can just find humor out of like the Federal Reserve and like,
right.
they own the money, but he can make it funny. Like you're saying, people have an opinion, but it's got to be funny.
Right.
He's able to have these opinions and also be funny. And he broke down great writing tips as far as like, hey, I may write 20 and only keep one of them. Like, great writing tips on, you know, you go to the analogy aisle and uh-huh. pull out some analogies for this joke, and you go over to this aisle and apply like a callback to it or whatever. So his was really good for writing specifically. Probably for stories, Dan Pasternak. Are you familiar with Dan Pasternak?
Yeah.
I didn't realize, I interviewed him while he was in town for the Laughing Skull Festival. I didn't realize he was like best friends with like Jonathan Winters.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Like, he was showing me pictures in his like living room of the art Jonathan Winters gave him. He had all these great stories of just legends that he's been able to interview and what he's learned. So he was another good one.
I'll tell you, my favorite is Nick Griffin.
Yes.
Nick was very, yes. You know, he's so funny, but in the he was like very self-deprecating and like.
That's Nick, yeah.
But I've worked with him several times back in the day at the Cleveland Improv specifically.
Yeah.
I think we worked maybe two or three times together up there. And he would just, every show, he would just come out and go, I don't know, man.
Yeah.
I just don't know. I'm like, you just crush. He goes, I don't know, man. Then next week, you see him on Letterman or something. And,
yeah.
You know, next time I work with him, man, I saw you in Letterman. Yeah, I don't know, man. I probably won't get invited back. Yeah. Then he would just crush it, you know.
So good.
So good and dark. You know, he was going through a divorce, I think, at the time.
Oh, wow.
If I remember right. But he was funny. But he had a great interview.
He was on Letterman like 12 times.
Yeah, he was pretty consistent and prolific on there.
Yeah, and he had that story, like Dave Attell. He was like, somebody was staying with Nick Griffin, and Dave Attell was like, hey, be sure to open the window to let the sad out,
yeah,
or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, I'm sorry, you said name two interviews, then I just listed like five.
That's all right. I'm going to put those in the show notes so people can kind of click through.
But it's just like your episodes, I try to make sure my listeners leave with some nugget of knowledge, mm-hmm. at least one. So, like, that's what your podcast inspired me to do, is really take it as a learning experience each interview.
It's cool, man.
Yeah.
Joe, it's been a lot of fun.
Dude,
we talked for a while. this might just be a two-parter.
I
might
yeah, split that's it down what I was thinking.
Put
yeah,
them out 2 weeks in a row.
That's what I was thinking. Like I'll just do one half 1 week and then the other half the next.
I'm gonna call you Mr. October because I was. You'll be the 15th.
Oh yeah, because you do it every other first. Yeah, so first and 15th. Yeah.
So we'll just do it that way. That'll be two nice episodes there. And if you guys listen to this one first, you don't have to listen to the other one. I'm just talking about myself. But make sure you
told an untold story on there.
I told a few.
Oh
yeah. So my goal this year is to tell a few more. I don't know how deep I want to get into it, but I know there's comics that go through some down times, you know, and I try to be an upbeat guy, but there was times where I was like, you know, very detrimental to myself.
I'm sure.
So there may be a few episodes where we're like, all right, grab a Kleenex box and let's get into it. We'll see. Cool, man. I'm so happy you came through.
Thanks for having me, Rick. This has been a long time coming, man. I'm a super big fan.
And do I say like hot breath at the end or something?
You can. Hot breath.
Hot breath.
Thanks, buddy. We made it. Oh, it's spreading. The hot breathiverse is spreading. Thank you for hanging out. I would say my favorite part of this interview would probably be him talking about goal setting and just the trophy goals. You know, it's really easy to kind of get caught up in the glitz and glamour, but at the end of the day, it is just talking about that step-by-step, baby, creating actually impactful goals. So that's really been a big shift for me. Not only with the podcast, but my comedy and just overall like life goals. So that was awesome. I would love to know what your favorite moment, hot breath moment, hashtag Joelment, if you will, of this interview would be. That really gives me good feedback as far as maybe moments I can build on in future episodes. So it's really, it's very helpful. You can do that on my Facebook page or Instagram or Twitter or my website, joelbyerscomedy.com. All my social media is at Joel Byers Comedy. I'm active on there. I just started posting my Instagram game. If you haven't seen it, bruh, it's completely shifted. It now has a very specific focus. I think you'll be able to tell when you get over there. Just from all the interviews I've done with social media people and even just sitting down with veterans like Rick Roberts, it's really kind of helped me get a focus and a very specific bearings on what I want my comedy to be. I hope that these episodes help you do the exact same thing. That is what this is all about, is empowering you to really become a productive comedian or productive accountant or a productive parent, productive person. However you're finding these episodes, I really hope they do provide information that you can then apply to yourself. That's what it's all about, learning. Please, if you know somebody else who likes learning, tag them up on this episode, share it with them. Of course, iTunes reviews always go a big way as far as helping us get more exposure out there in the podcast universe. And most importantly, and most recently, the Patreon page. We have 6 patrons right now, and I am so appreciative. Over there at patreon.com/hotbreathpod, you can get exclusive content that I released over there on Sundays and Fridays. I released an interview that actually hadn't been heard anywhere else. I was featured in a Decatur newspaper, and for the interview, I ended up recording it. It was supposed to be 15 minutes, ended up being 45 minutes, just because it became such a great conversation. A lot of great knowledge dropped over there that I released on the Patreon page, along with a bunch of other stuff like my social media. I mentioned how much that shifted. I just posted like a 10-minute rant about all I've learned and how I'm applying it and how you can as well to your overall social media identity. It's really a fun place. I really enjoy it. And if you'd like to support the podcast, you know, and help us get to our video goal, I would greatly appreciate that over at patreon.com/hotbreathpod. But, of course, your ears are extremely valuable, and I do appreciate those as well. And I do appreciate, of course, my engineer, Amon Garner. Hit him up for any audio needs. And of course, my wife, Erin Byers, for making the theme song. And of course, if you're listening this far into the outro, you are a true fan. And if you are interested, my comedy class is starting back up on November 5th. So if you're interested in the 8-week comedy class, definitely highwirecomedy.com. It's also linked from my website, joelbyerscomedy.com.
If you have any questions, feel free to reach out to me. It's really become one of my favorite weekly activities is just getting to teach comedy because I learn from teaching and it is so much fun. So this is so much fun. I'm really loving where we're headed with everything. And your support really helps keep me motivated even in the more dragging days. So this was a good one. I'll be out on Wednesdays at a Java Monkey Indicator if you want to see me host some comedy. But otherwise, until next Monday, right here on Hot Breath.
This episode of Hot Breath is sponsored by our Patreon. If any of our content has helped your comedy career, join our Patreon linked in the show notes and get positive comedy karma for life. Probably.